show. We play so much different stuff every week that I think that really sets us apart. And I don't know, I think it's going to be a great thing for listeners here in Cleveland.
Gotcha. Well, we're gonna play one more song here before we go into the news, but definitely glad to have you down. It's been a lot of fun. I've had a couple other DJs from some of the other stations come down just to hang out and talk metal. So it'd be interesting, I'd like to talk about some releases and some bands and stuff like that with you.
This would be great because usually it's me sitting by myself down at the station on Saturdays, and that gets kind of boring. So because of that metal.
Well, this is Soilwork. We're gonna end off with Reject Your Role going out by request to. Actually, they didn't leave me a name. So, well, it's a guy from Florida because that's what his email address said, Florida State. So I'm assuming that's where he's from. So whoever it is in Florida that wanted to hear this song, here you go. And we're back around the Metal Command show. Time now is 11:08. Just heard some Jagdpanzer off of the new album, The Scourge of Light. Unfortunately, a broken up Jagdpanzer, but nevertheless, they did put out a pretty solid release this year. And still here, we got Dr. Metal going to be sitting back doing a show here with me, and you upset Jagdpanzer's gone, dude?
Oh, yeah, dude. I mean, that's one of the few good American power metal bands out there, and so to see them call it quits, I mean, I've sort of gotten used to a world without Jagdpanzer because it'd been so long since they put out this album. Then they put this album out, and it's such a tease that they sort of remind everybody that they're out there still doing good stuff, and then they call it quits. Makes no sense. I mean, I'm sure it makes sense to them or whatever, but, I mean, just in terms of the timing of it, it's odd to me.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. I was really, it's like we had auditioned a new guitar player, and all of a sudden, they just call it quits.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you analyze that statement or at least just read it, it makes absolutely no sense at all. Yeah. You know, because they go from, yeah, we were going to audition this new guitarist and get somebody in place, but, then we just decided to call it quits. And I don't know. It just doesn't make any sense at all. But that's their thing.
Email here, officermetal@metalcommand.net. You can also tweet at me, at officermetal. And then, of course, you can listen online, wbwc.com. Here on the Metal Command show, and it's really funny. So you've been on here for how long now? Well, first of all, talk a bit about the show. You're on WRUW, and
yeah. So traditionally, I've been on Saturdays 3:30 to 5:30, and even tomorrow I'll be doing my last Saturday show. So tune in tomorrow afternoon if you're looking for two more hours of metal, 91.1. But starting next Friday, I'm going to be on Friday nights from 5 to 7 p.m. So going to be sort of kicking off a nice metal block that you take on into the wee hours of the morning here.
And that's what's really cool. I was thinking about that, and literally you're on 5 to 7, you got Bill on 6:30 to 9:30, then the half hour break, and then this show comes on. And what's really crazy, it's some of the people that I talked to, and I'm sure that you've interviewed and stuff, they don't have, a lot of people are like, we don't have anybody that plays anything like that, even on college stations, which I think... 8 hours on a Friday night, that's crazy. That's like, I mean, I can't even see that even happening in like Germany, where it's just where like this music's like really big, That's what's really cool, I think. And the cool thing about metal is the genre is so diverse, is that you could have 20 metal shows and have all of them sound different.
Oh, absolutely. Well, and I think, I mean, you and I in particular tend to, go for the obscure, stuff, and I mean our interests overlap a decent amount with power metal and everything, but even so, I take a glance every week just out of curiosity at your playlist and at Bill's playlist to try to avoid repeating anything, and even if I didn't look at them, I don't think there'd really be any repeats in terms of songs.
No, but what's really funny about that, because I sometimes like to look at people's playlist, and I look at, what's his name, Bob from WCSB, and I look at everybody's playlist, and it's like, you look at it, and you're like, you have all the same bands, but different songs sometimes, Like, I'll never forget when, and I can't remember, just to pull an album off, out of my head, when Primal Fear came out with their last album, that comes to my mind, I don't know why, but I remember I played a song off of that every week for like 2 months, and time I played a song off of that, it was a different song than what you played off of it, which was really cool.
Well, that was a killer album, 16-6, Before the Devil Knows You're Dead, And for me, that sort of restored my faith in the band, because for a while, it kind of happened with Hammerfall, too. Like, they came out of gates really, you know, strong, put out some really great albums that gave them a name, and then kind of tailed off for me. I don't know. And that album just is killer.
So I still
like pulling out tracks from that from time to time.
I would definitely agree with that. And it's really interesting. So, you know, for you, and at least for me, from looking back for the last, let's say, 13 years since you and I have been doing our shows, I mean, pretty much you were on probably a semester or two before I came on. And, you know, what's interesting is that, you know, we really were in a lot of the same bands. But for me, you know, up until, like, recently, there was, like, that string of, like, 3 or 4 years where it really was hard for me to get into some of the new releases. Did you go through that? I don't think we're the only ones, because a lot of the listeners that had emailed me were saying, man, you know, I used to love this band back in, like, the late 90s, and then, you know, they put out these albums, I didn't care for them, and then, you know, the band would come out with, you know, say, like, Ed Guy, for example. You know, I really liked their new album, The Age of the Joker, but before that, the last couple of records, you know, they were okay, but they weren't anything. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense to you?
I mean, that definitely resonates, because, you know, when I started, and, you know, part of me wonders if this is just my biased opinion, because that's when I got into things, because, you know, I started my show in late 97, and when I started, you know, I remember going down to Shattered, and, you know, really sort of cleaning out their stock of power metal, and for me, like, a lot of my interest in power metal was spawned from those two Judas Priest tribute albums that Century Media put out in 96 or whatever it was.
They were imports, too, because, remember, if you remember that, the first, God, it had to have been, the record that was released in the U.S. was just a hybrid of those, but imports, remember, imports used to be really expensive, too? These were like $30, $25 for the CDs, man. I remember Blind Guardian, even, you know, I remember buying all their albums for like $25 back in the day when they, you know, remember that? Oh, my God.
Well, and dealing with like all the import dealers and everything, I mean, in some ways, like, you know, I don't have an experience with drug dealers, but to me, it seems kind of like that, just in terms of like, because you had a very personal relationship with these people to call them up and find out what was new and what was hot and what they had in stock and what they could send you and what they'd be happy to sell you for 25 or 35 bucks. And I don't know, whereas nowadays, you pull up Amazon or you pull up, you know, any number of places, and you can either download these releases for a buck a track, or, you know, you can get the CD for 10 bucks, even if it's quote-unquote import. So it's just a different era, but, you know, those Judas Priest albums got me into things, because it was sort of a who's who in power metal. You know, you had Stradivarius on there, and you had Skyclad on there. I mean, just got me into all these bands.
I forgot about Skyclad being on that. Wow, that's, God, I have to go back and listen to those, because that's been
Blind Guardian was on there. I mean, you know, all these bands, and I think that's sort of what got me curious about a lot of these bands. A couple of them, you know, didn't lead anywhere, but, you know, most of those bands, you know, Virgin Steel was on there. And so I'd go out and just pick up the catalogs for all these bands, you know, over the course of a few weeks or months at a time at great expense. And, but that's what got me into stuff. So really, like, that time period, like 98 especially, I think of as being just such an amazing year for metal, because you had, you know, Blind Guardian, Nightfall, Middle Earth, you had Virgin Steel, Invictus, which, you know, you had Ed Guy, Vainglory Opera, I think was the same year. And for me, that's sort of a magical time.
Yep.
But I don't know if I can fairly say that those albums are, you know, in sort of an unbiased opinion, the best albums, or that's just that I have personal feelings associated with them to the point where, like, to me, those are the best albums, and those bands have had a hard time matching them since.
You know, and some other releases that kind of throw in there, like, you know, the first Rhapsody album, you know, the first Hammerfall, remember Somewhere Out in Space by Gamma Ray was just awesome. Better Than Raw by Halloween was awesome. Rage, don't forget 13, man. That was another great release. But you know what? I look at it this way, because I look at it from two different perspectives on that. You know, the first thing I look at is from the fan perspective. I mean, that was like, you know, we kind of had a grunge era, you know, in the early 90s that kind of really just kind of killed things off over here. But then, you know, there was kind of a resurgence that started. And, you know, like the first Primal Fear album, that was 98, too. I mean, you think I was going back and looking at that year, and I was like, wow, look at all these albums. Bruce Dickinson, Chemical Wedding, you know, coming out around that time. You had Iron Savior had their first couple records. I mean, so you had a lot of really good stuff. But see, with me, and I'm one of those people that thinks to myself, okay, you know, I am sort of biased. But at the same time, from the musician point of view, just from that side of me, you can see some of these guys, you know, some of the bands stayed innovative, and then, you know, some of them just kind of rehashed a lot of stuff, you know, because, like, when I started really doing a lot of the music thing, I really picked up on a lot of things, and there were some nuances from some of these records. Like, man, I heard that, like, in their last, like, three releases, you know, and you start picking that up. So, you know, I don't think it's really as much bias as it is. I mean, it just, they either were, A, doing it for the sake of just doing it, and some bands, they try to be innovative. Like, you know, I've liked everything Rage has really put out for the most part. I mean, they've stayed pretty good. Blind Guardian, I mean, I really can't say, I mean, a lot of people don't like their recent output, but I mean, they still have put out some decent records that, you know, were something different. And, you know, so we're going to play a song here, get some music, though. But, you know, you understand what I'm saying, though, right?
Yeah.
And, but, you know, I still, that year, 97 through 2000 was like, you know, was like the golden, you know, there was my high school days of getting into, like, the older stuff, Megadeth and things like that. But 97 through 2000 with a lot of these metal bands, you know, to me, from that perspective, was really huge for me, like, getting back, because I was already into metal, but then I remember getting into a lot of stuff, you know, my freshman, sophomore, you know, junior year of college, that, you know, like Demons and Wizards came out around that time. And, you know, just think about a lot of these releases. I look back at, I'll go to my iTunes and I'll just hit, you know, order by year. And I'll just go down and look at the records. Like, my God, I used to listen to this, like, nonstop in college, know?
Yeah.
And that's just, it was a golden era for me. Kind of a little bit for me now, the last couple years. But we'll talk a little bit about that here in a second. But I'm going to play some Symphony X off of their newest album, Children of a Faceless God. This is the name of the song, and this is off of Iconoclad. All right, back here on the Metal Command. Time now, 11:31. Just heard Halloween, Wake Up the Mountain, going out to Jason in California. Didn't give me a city, but he's out in California, away from, he said it was a small town. I don't remember where he said he was from, but Symphony X, Children of a Faceless God as well. So, still here. We've got Dr. Metal still in the studio. And, you know, so I'm just kind of talking off the air a little bit. We talked about the golden age of when metal really kind of came from being into it to, like, really being into it to doing the shows and stuff. So, you know, for at least the last couple years for me, I've really enjoyed a lot of new releases by bands. And I'm just curious, you know, what's it been like for you? I mean, have there been releases that you've liked a lot? You know, what are some albums you've really been digging quite a bit?
You know, it's been a good time for metal, and it's easy to get sort of overwhelmed by the sheer number of releases. I guess that's what was different about 98 to me, or 97 to me, too. It just seems like there's so much coming out right now, and seems sort of like an arms race to release albums, too, because these bands, you know, it seems like there's a lot of pressure to just crank out releases, whether they're studio albums or live albums. I mean, in terms of new stuff that's come out, I mean, that Blind Guardian you mentioned, I like that album a lot. You know, I put that pretty high up in, you know, my top 25 list or whatever for last year. Volbeat, pretty much everything they've put out the last few years I've liked a lot. You know, Sabaton, I've really enjoyed their last couple of releases. I like those guys a lot. They got a cool sound. And looking forward to seeing them come to town, finally coming up here next month. And New Symphony X, I think, is pretty good. That's a band I've never historically cared about or really gotten into.
Mm-hmm.
And really like that new album, actually. It's got a cool sound. Their last album was pretty good, too. So I don't know. There's a lot of stuff out there. Gamma Ray, I wish they'd pick it up a little bit. I don't know. I think they're off their game. I don't know.
Gamma Ray is like the AC/DC of power metal.
But they never used to be, though.
Nope.
Seems like they used to sort of work at it and put out some good albums. I mean, Land of the Free, Power Plant.
Yep.
I don't know. There's some quality releases in there.
Well, you know, and we're getting on that subject, at least for me. You know, this show was named after, the song the show was named after, I was a really big fan of the Bay Area thrash scene from a long time, and this show was named after an Exodus song from their first album. And, you know, the last couple of years, a lot of these thrash metal bands that either still existed or didn't exist for a long time, for me, put out a lot of really great stuff. I mean, I literally, you know, like Death Angel and Forbidden's last album, just to name the Overkill's last album, I actually really enjoyed quite a bit.
Oh, yeah, that was a great album.
That was a great record. Heathen putting out a really good record. Just a lot of these Bay Area bands, Exodus putting out stuff for the last 6-7 years. And what's really funny about that is that this last 2 years have been really, really, I was into the show, but I really, when I came back on the air, I was kind of like, you know, about 3.5 years ago, I was kind of like, you know, I was really into everything a lot more than what I was, say, 10 years ago. I don't know why. You know, I guess a lot of stuff had gotten stale for me. But, you know, for me personally, like 2009 was like kind of the start of it. You know, I've been really into a lot of these thrash metal bands, just putting out these releases that were like blowing my mind. Like, you know, and some of them were obscure bands. Like, for example, the band Artillery. When Death Comes, and I really dug that record. I mean, it was my favorite album of 2009. I could not stop listening to it. And yeah. And even some prog stuff like Pagan's Mind I've really been into, and, you know, stuff like that. So, you know, for the last like couple years, 2-3 years have really been, I mean really big for me as far as, you know, really getting into this, because I've, you know, and it's funny, you know, we were talking about Iron Maiden off the air a little bit, but it's funny how, you know, I went back and listened to Bruce's solo stuff, and then I was listening to Blaze's stuff, and I'm thinking, you know, these guys, you know, one's still in the band and one's not in the band, but even Bruce's stuff after he was out of the band, I like it better than Maiden. Doesn't that sound crazy? Like, the last Blaze Bailey album I thought was actually really good.
Yeah,
and they had a song on there that the first like 5-6 tracks on that album were really good. And, you know, it's kind of like, what do you think about Maiden, dude? Do you like the new stuff? Yeah. Yes. No.
You know, I will say the last album, there are a couple songs, you know, I actually did play on my show, which is sort of a new thing, because, you know, some of those albums I never would play anything from them at all. But I would gladly trade all the albums that they've done since Bruce has gotten back in the band for like another Bruce Dickinson solo record, because, you know, Accident of Birth, Chemical Wedding, even Tyranny of Souls, to me, those are fantastic albums, and the last few Maiden records just have been mediocre, really repetitive, redundant. You know, you've got these 8-minute tracks or 10-minute tracks where, you know, it's just the same, you know, chorus going over and over and over and again. And I mean, that's been the case since Brave New World. I hated that record for that reason, and sitting through 5 or 6 of those tracks, you know, live out at Blossom was torturous, because you know, it's like Wicker Man is a good song on there because it's sort of short and sweet and to the point. But, you know, when they say Blood Brothers for the 50th time in that song, you know, in a 7-minute song or whatever, you know, I want to rip my hair out. I've got no use for the Maiden stuff, and I've got really little use for the stuff that Halford's done with Priest. You know, and I thought Halford's, you know, Resurrection album was great. And a really good return for him. And, you know, if he were to get back to putting solo stuff like that together, I'd be real happy. But the last couple of records he's put out have been, I don't know.
You didn't like the Christmas album?
Well, that whole seasonal thing. You know, I do love my cheesy, you know, metal. I mean, I'm a big Manowar fan. And, you know, metal and cheese sort of go hand in hand. And everything, but I just haven't been able to get into those seasonal records. I mean, the Twisted Sister stuff. I mean, there's people that love this stuff, and I don't know. I don't really listen to that a whole lot. I mean, I listen to Trans-Siberian Orchestra a little bit, but yeah, the whole like metal Christmas album thing just doesn't do anything for me.
Gotcha. You know what? It's really funny. We were talking about TSO. I've been listening to Sabotage like nonstop, literally, not kidding you, nonstop for the last week, literally. Like, I'll be online playing games or editing website stuff, and I got one of their albums playing in the background. And, you know, I know you have, you know, you've had contact with those guys over the years, and, you know, I know they got TSO going on, but have they ever like hinted they would ever actually go maybe do like a farewell tour with that band, like Sabotage? Or
they've talked about doing some things for anniversaries or whatever, you know, in terms of putting together like a DVD or a live record or something like that. I don't really know what the holdup really is. It seems a little strange to me, in the sense that, you know, each one of those guys is sort of off doing sort of their own thing, you know, whether it's, you know, John Oliva doing John Oliva's Pain or Chris Caffrey doing his solo stuff. You know, Johnny Lee Middleton's got stuff going on, I know. You know, Jeff Plate was in Metal Church for a while there as well. And, you know, to me it's just like, what's the harm in having those guys get together in the off season, you know, and cranking out a Sabotage record? I mean, you know, even if they don't tour or anything else like that, I don't know. I mean, I guess they just want to focus on the TSO brand and not, you know, deal with Sabotage. But it's too bad because, I mean, I liked Wake of Magellan. I liked Poets and Mad Men. I mean, you know, maybe they don't stack up to some of their older stuff, but I think they were still putting together some decent material.
I actually, with Sabotage, I kind of looked at them. There was almost two eras of the band. There was the early era, you know, your Sirens, Dungeons Are Calling, and I was listening to those albums. And, you know, you really don't, I really never, you know, again, this is the musician side of me talking, but I didn't realize before I really started knowing anything about composing music how awesome Chris Oliva was. And, you know, even some of the, you know, the rhythms and stuff he was playing. But then, you know, didn't he have that era of the band, the old era, which kind of ends with Hall of the Mountain King. And then you got Gutter Ballet and Streets kind of go off into the more, you know, I guess a different direction. But, you know, it's funny because I was listening to Streets today, and I was just listening to that song Jesus Saves, and the solo in it is ridiculous. I mean, I'm just listening to him play the solo, and I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. This is insane, you know? But the thing is with them is that I always thought it was two different eras of the band, but they were always innovative because not one album sounded the same by them. And, you know, if I were to take Wake of Magellan, it's maybe Dead Winter Dead maybe sounded a little bit like it, but, you know, it was still a lot different. And Poets and Madman still a lot different, you know. And I really, really like that band. And it's kind of like, not. And even the old stuff, man. I was listening to Hall of the Mountain King, man. John Oliva in his prime was awesome.
Oh yeah.
And it's listening to that stuff, and you know, John Oliva's Pain is cool, but I would love for them to put out a full blown record again because, you know, you could do your solo stuff and it could sound like Sabotage and all that all you want, but you know, when it boils down to it. Is that, you know, when that all those guys together is just, you could put out something really awesome. And and maybe Paul O'Neill doesn't want to do that. I don't know. But, you know, that's something that, to me, if it were me, I would love to hear Sabotage put another record out. Or at least do like a farewell album, you know. And maybe release, I know they released that compilation with a DVD a couple years back. But, you know, they just really... You know, at least to me, I would love to see that band put another album out. I really would.
Yeah, I mean, I think the band lives on in John Oliva's Pain to some extent, because if you listen to that, you know, you got that sort of raw, you know, sort of power that you had, I think, in some of those earlier Sabotage records like you were talking about. You know, it's sort of heavier stuff. And to me, John, you know, John sounds pretty good these days, actually. You know, if you pull up, you know, some of the live stuff that he's done, you know, and performing, you know, some of the old albums and everything. I mean, he sounds good. You know, like he's got his voice back.
He sounds really good. Yeah. Really good.
So, you know, the John Oliva's Pain stuff, I really enjoy some of those songs that they've done. I mean, Maniacal Renderings and, you know, some of those tracks are great.
I liked all four albums that he's put out. Yeah. You know, and the thing is, when you listen to it live, see, studio, I mean, you could do anything you want in a studio. You can really patch things up. I mean, you know, the reason Ozzy stays in tune is because they do massive surgery on his vocals, but, you know, they do like massive Pro Tool surgery on him. But, you know, when you listen to John sing stuff live, I mean, he was singing, I think it was Edge of Thorns. I heard him singing that live, and I was like, man, he sounds freaking good, you know? And he's just sitting down. I mean, you know, he has a little bit of a weight issue, but he's sitting down. He's playing a keyboard at the same time, and it's singing. And the guy sounds awesome. I mean, he really does. And you know, when you could do it live and stay in tune and really do it, that's when you know the guy's got it back. And you know, like Dio, I mean, the guy was almost 70, and you go see him live. I mean, he was pretty much. I mean, he had to do some breaks in between, some solos, give him a little bit of a breather. But the guy still had his voice. And, and it's amazing. You know, because I watch these YouTube videos, right, of John Oliva's Pain playing like Vakken and some of these other places, and it's amazing to hear just he sounds like the John Oliva of old to an extent, and that's what's really awesome to hear.
Well, and like I've really enjoyed, they've reissued pretty much their whole back catalog, and on those there's a lot of acoustic versions and things like that, some of which John's recently gone into the studio and recorded. So I've really enjoyed hearing that stuff. I mean, I don't know, I don't get sick of listening to Sabotage. I mean, and I really enjoy the acoustic versions just because, they offer sort of a different take. And, I mean, a lot of this stuff, especially from the later era, sort of lends itself really well to that format, I think. And so, listening to an acoustic rendering of, Believe or Somewhere in Time or something like that, whether it's with a guitar or with piano, I don't know, I don't get sick of that. And like you said, John sounds great these days, I think.
Sounds good. Well, we're still here on the Metal Command Show. I got Dr. Metal from the Metal Meltdown Show at WRUW just talking about some stuff and going to play some John Oliva's Pain right now. I had an email, actually, to play it. We're going to play, this is off of the Taj Mahal album, and this is called The Dark. Here you go. And that's John Oliva's Pain with The Dark off of the album Taj Mahal. And really good album. What's your favorite John Oliva's Pain album? What would you say it would be for you? If you had to pick one.
That's a tough call. I mean, I guess Maniacal Renderings. That's one of the three or four albums, right? I'm not remembering that wrong.
Maniacal Renderings.
All right. Because I know that I get the song and the album confused. But yeah, I really like that album. I don't know. I mean, I think the second and the third really have been the best to me. The last one I haven't listened to, I guess, enough to get into it as much as the older ones. I don't know. What'd you think of Festival?
I've liked all four of them. For me personally, I mean, I loved the first one when it came out. I like all of them. I think Festival was good. If I had to pick probably the least favorite, it would be Global Warming.
I don't know
what it is. I just for that record, maybe it was just because there was a lot of short songs. It was a much different music. It wasn't really different, but it was just a lot of short songs. Really wasn't what they had in the first couple. But the Festival was good. But again, like we were just talking, normally every year I'd have a top 25. We'll turn into a top 50.
Yeah.
Because there are so many, and it's like anybody who was anybody released a record last year. And it's really funny because releasing a record is, even for the record company, is not an easy thing. I mean, they're so desperate to the point where they're trying to just throw anything at the wall and see what sticks, because you're going to see a lot of bands now going away from a traditional record deal. A lot of people can just record the stuff themselves or have a studio do it much cheaper than they would, and then they can just put it out themselves. I mean, CDs cost, the logistics is this, CDs cost about $1.50 a pop. If you order, say if you order 1,500 of them, right? $1.50, you sell them for, $9, say for example, or you sell them wholesale to someplace like the 5 or 6. So when you think about it, because the actual markup by most mail order companies is about $4, $5 maybe. So you get this wholesale $4 or $5. I mean, you're doing what a record label does. And, now that a lot of these bands self-produced a little bit, I think you're going to see a lot of them straying away from record companies eventually, because you're going to still have those that need the labels, but a lot of them don't need the labels anymore. And a lot of them do things themselves. The labels don't have to pay for anything, but it's almost like you're signing your life away. So, John produces his own stuff, and you're going to see a lot of that stuff coming up. So, I mean, that's just, but putting out an album is really not, it's not easy though. At the same time, you got to market it. You got to really, you got to have the songs too, but you got to really get them heard, because the market's so saturated. And to me, one of the best quotes from any interview that I've ever had was, believe it or not, was Blackie Lawless. And this was like a year and a half ago. And this is what he said to me. He said that, the way it is now, you'll never see another, say, Bruce Dickinson or another AC/DC or another whatever, another big, huge, groundbreaking metal band, because everything's saturated. Back in the day, what did you have? There was no internet. So you had print, radio, TV. That was it. There was no internet. There was nothing, whoever had the money to advertise are the people that got their stuff heard, right? But what that did is you could take large groups of people, move them into one direction. You can't do that now because it's so saturated. And You know, but at the same time, you know, there's so many quality releases out there. I mean, that's something that, to me, as a fan, you know, I'm a collector. Like, I'm like Bill Peters. I'm a hoarder when it comes to discs. So I don't have the he's probably not listening because he's on the air, but he doesn't – I don't have – I'm not hoarding, like, what is it, 1,500 records or something that he has? And, like, 15,000, I think it is. And it's – we're not exaggerating, but – you know, as a fan, you know, when I buy these records, I buy the collector versions of them because there's a bunch of really cool stuff in there. You know? Yeah. Like the upcoming Brainstorm album, I pre-ordered that. I mean, it wasn't really expensive, but it's a special edition, you know, and that's what's really cool about that sense is that they're putting out some cool packaging now that you never would have gotten 10 years ago.
Hell, I didn't even know they had a record coming out.
Yeah, they do.
I mean, I would assume just, you know, they crank stuff out, you know, pretty regularly.
I shop at one CD place online that usually keeps you abreast of stuff coming out. So that's kind of how I usually find out because it's hard to, you know, when you go to like Brave Words or Blabbermouth, I mean, look at all the stuff that's up there. I mean, that's completely insane. You know what I'm saying? You know, and it's kind of, I don't know, crazy. So, but I'm going to play a song to end off the hour by really, really a band that I still think is really good as old as they are. And that's Saxon.
Yeah.
You know, you like Saxon? Are you still into those guys?
Not as much as I was, actually. That's a band that I've just fallen out of touch with in terms of keeping up with their stuff. So, you know, I remember Unleash the Beast. I really enjoyed that album. And, you know, the next couple albums, I guess I kept up with. But I have no idea what they have going on now.
They still keep putting out really good records. I mean, the older they've gotten, the heavier they've gotten. And... like, they're just, I don't know what it is. It's just that these guys, the older they get, the better they get. I don't know. But this is Hammer of the Gods. This is off their new album, The Call to Arms. Back around the Metal Command time now, 12:09, and still got Dr. Metal here. And doesn't that song bring back memories, dude?
Oh, yeah, man. Well, I mean, we were just reminiscing about where we got that album from, you know, Mail Order Place and how we got into those guys.
You know, let's talk about Mail Order Places. You know, the one thing to me in music that's really been lost is just the personal interaction with people. You know, like I was really tight with Neil from Altamira for years. Even now, I mean, I still talk to him. He's selling a lot of his memorabilia on eBay.
Yeah.
But, you know, you had Frank at Shattered.
Yeah.
You had that place. There was a place out in Menor that I used to go to once in a while that was really cool. And, you know, now it's Amazon, you know, and, you know, CD Insane, I will say, though, is pretty cool because you talk to a real person. I talked to the guy, the owner. The owner's really cool. I mean, you know, they waited a long time for some titles for me, and then they ended up taking a hit on the shipping for me.
Yeah.
You know, for shipping me a bunch of DVDs a couple years back. But they're really cool. But you really don't have... You know what I'm saying? Don't you miss that, dude? Just going in and...
I mean, I personally miss it because, I mean, that's how I found out about a lot of bands because, you know, I would get into something and then, you know, these people knew enough about the music they were selling to be able to tell you, you know, hey, if you really like these guys, check out this band and that band and that band. And I mean, I guess technology has replaced that to some extent because, you know, if you listen to or if you go online and, you know, some of these sites will direct you to other bands that sound like that. Or you can get into, you know, message boards where people are, you know, sharing tips and things like that. So, I mean, I guess to some extent you can still do that with technology. And now with, like, YouTube and... you know, the internet being what it is, I mean, it's so easy to listen to bands. And, I mean, that's the counter to what you're saying about, you know, how you know, things have changed, maybe not for the better. But, you know, now it is possible for a band to really, you know, get huge exposure and, you know, for people all over the world to find out about that band, you know, without them necessarily having a record deal or... you know, going on tour or whatever else. I mean, you know, you put something up on YouTube that, you know, catches people's attention and you might have 100,000 people checking out a band.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the internet's fed into, you know, some of these bands' success too, you know, and I think has worked in the favor of, you know, some of the bands that we play actually that, you know, up until a few years ago, if you weren't listening to our show or checking out, you know, one of the music websites online, you wouldn't necessarily find out about these bands. So, but I guess it's a double-edged sword, though, for these bands because it also leads to people not actually buying the CDs for them or supporting them, you know, in any kind of meaningful financial sense.
Well, you know, it's funny because when it was really funny because I remember talking to Bill Peters. Maybe he's listening now because he should be off the air. Bill, you, well, maybe he's listening. I don't know. But anyway, one of the things he said to me that was really cool that really made a lot of sense to me, because we were talking about a lot of, you can feed it off the net, you can check it out on the net. But, you know, when we talked about that, and the interview, God, it was almost about a couple years ago now. But he said that, you know, we were talking about different metal shows, like in just in the area, and he said that you still need somebody to put everything in perspective for you. You know, you understand what I'm saying? Like, you can have an iPod, and you can listen to, I can listen to something I really like all day, but, you know, you really need a show, or you need a person out there to really kind of put this in perspective for you, you know, to kind of talk about certain things, aspects of the band, whatever it is, you know, but you need that perspective from somebody, because what happens is, you know, once you have someone to put that in perspective, then, you know, bring it all together for people, it's kind of like, you know, it brings a different meaning to it. You understand what I'm saying? Like, I could stream something on MySpace all day, but, you know, what do people think? You know, what do I think? You know, it's good to hear an opinion about it. And I think that, you know, most radio stations don't even have a person behind the microphone anymore. So it's kind of like, now I've had more listeners to this show probably in the last 3 years than I've had before that, because I think people miss the personality behind a microphone. And it's really not just me. I'm just talking whoever. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
Well, and I mean, I obviously believe there's a value in, you know, having people to expose you to different bands. I mean, otherwise I wouldn't be dedicating a few hours a week to doing a show, and I wouldn't have been doing that for the last, you know, gosh, 14 years or whatever now either. So, you know, my feeling is, you know, one of the things that college radio especially has to offer, I think, is just sort of the expertise and years of experience in a genre to where I can say, hey, I've sorted through the 200 releases that have come out in the last 2 months, and, like, these are the gems that I've found. Mm-hmm. And if something's crappy, I'll either not play it, or I'll play it once and say, hey, you know, this is crap, I'm not going to play it again. And really, like, I mean, I guess I view it as, like, endorsing stuff by playing it myself and hopefully exposing people to stuff that they wouldn't necessarily hear. And that's part of the reason, like, I don't go on my show every week and play Number the Beast or, like, the same, you know, five songs or whatever. Like, you know, I'm sort of a nut about checking stats and being like, oh, man, I've done 400 shows that are logged in the computer. Like, the most I've ever played a song is like 12 or 13 times,
yeah,
you know, out of those shows. And, like, I pride myself on that because I'm trying to get people, you know, to find out about bands that they wouldn't otherwise find. I mean, it makes people uncomfortable because some people want to hear, you know, the same Slayer songs, you know, and then I'm there saying, yeah, well, I'm not going to play Slayer for you, dude, so too bad, you know. Like, I think I've played Slayer like 3 times over the last like 14 years, and it drives people nuts, I'm sure. But,
well, you know, what I've always done with this show is I like to, the first hour, what I've always done traditionally is the first hour I always play newer stuff, and the second hour I usually do an interview hour, or I try to do like a theme hour. Like, I'll do like live tracks from different bands, you know, from different live albums over, you know, the last 30 years. And then the last hour I'll do a lot of the classic stuff for those people that want to hear some old school Maiden or Metallica or whatever. And it kind of, I've kind of tried to format it so it appeals in a sense to that. But then, you know, like when I play Metallica, I'm not going to play like Enter Sandman. I'm going to play like Disposable Heroes.
Right.
Or, you know, I'm going to play Slayer, I'm not going to play, you know, like Seasons in the Abyss. I'm going to play like Black Magic or something like that. Something by the band that's kind of been forgotten about. And it's funny because I did a Big Four. I'm a huge fan of the Big Four. Slayer is actually the least of my favorites of those four bands. I mean, probably it would go Megadeth, Anthrax, and then Metallica, then Slayer. But I played music from all four bands on New Year's Eve. We figured, great New Year's Eve theme. Let's bring some thrash metal in here. And what was funny about it is that, you know, I was playing, I try to play a lot of the more obscure stuff by those bands that really people hadn't paid as much attention to. Like, for Metallica, for example, like Trapped Under Ice, or like, you know, Sanitary, maybe get some airplay, but like a song like that, or Disposable right. Heroes, or, you know, not the stuff you hear on like different station, like, you know, Seek and Destroy and all that stuff, but try to play some different stuff, or like Megadeth. Megadeth's got a slew of stuff that really people haven't paid attention to. I played Mary Jane, for example.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a cool track. Or, you know, like The Conjuring.
right.
You know? And songs like that. And it was funny because people are like, Metal Thrashy Mad by Anthrax. People are like, man, like I haven't heard this in like 25, 30 years, man. 25 oh, yeah. years. And it was fun to play that stuff. You know, like the early, like the first Slayer album, I think was my favorite one by them. The first Slayer album is really good. It's kind of like, you know, like Show No Mercy, I thought was just, you know, this first. You know, back in those days, man, that was, like, innovative. I mean, he didn't have anything that heavy. You know, Show No Mercy and Kill 'Em All and, you know, playing stuff off of that, playing stuff off of, like, South of Heaven. At, you know, when people think of Slayer, they're thinking of Rain and Blood. You know, they're not thinking of, like, stuff. They think of some stuff of Seasons in the Abyss, but I like playing some of the more obscure stuff by these bands because I think that people really, they kind of gravitate, like, oh, my God, I forgot about this song, you know? I'm so used to hearing Indians by Anthrax or listening to Whom the Bell Tolls by Metallica, and I play those songs once in a while, but, you know, the cool stuff that you don't normally would hear, like, you know, we talked about, like, old school Iron Maiden, like, Number of the Beast, but, you know, how many people really play, like, the song Killers, or how many people right. do you hear play, like, you know, you don't hear, like, Still Life from Peace of Mind, and
oh, yeah.
or To Tame a Land, or, you know, even some of the stuff off of Somewhere in Time, like Sea of Madness, or, I'll tell you what, Alexander the Great is still one of my favorite.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But what I like to do is bring – I still play some of those classic songs because they are what they are. And, you know, I like to hear them because I gravitate away from them because there's so much new stuff. But then at the same time, you know, it's cool to hear some of the stuff that has kind of been forgotten about from some of those older records. You
oh,
know,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Well, I get protective of the 2 hours I have, too, every week to where, like – I the song that – You know, I named my show after Metal Meltdown by Judas Priest. Like, for a time there, back in the day, I used to play that, you know, sort of at the start of my show every week. But now, like, I don't want to waste 5 minutes of my time
yep.
playing the same song every week. You know, I've only got 2 hours a week. I mean, if I were doing it every day for, like, a four-hour block, you know, I'd have a lot of time for that kind of stuff. But in only doing 2 hours a week, you know, I want to try to cram in as much stuff as possible. And, you know, if that happens to correspond with some of the requests I get, you know, if they sort of fit what I'm doing, then, you know, I'm happy to play that kind of stuff. But, you know, I'm not going to sneak in a 5-minute Cannibal Corpse track just to appease, you know, Bob and Parma.
There's a guy in Tasmania listening to us right now.
Nice.
If that, no one's ever listened from Tasmania, whoever that is, email me. I'm curious to see who you are. OfficerMetal@MetalCommand.net. That's awesome. Hobart, Tasmania. I'm looking, that's crazy. The globe is really cool on a website. Anyway, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I thought that was crazy.
Nice. Now, is that a globe that everybody on the website can see?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
You go to the globe. Like, if you go on there from, if I log on to our website, WBWC.com, and your globe pops up, Berea, Ohio will pop up, for yeah. example. You know, and it'll pop up for about a good minute or so, then it disappears. But I'm just looking at the globe. You know, I'm seeing Amherst, Elyria, you know, North Olmsted, Cleveland, some people out in California, you know, stuff around the States, a couple things in Mexico. And then I just happen to turn around and look at the globe, and I see Hobart, Tasmania.
Nice.
So somebody from that area is listening to the show right now.
Yeah, they heard we were playing Old Rhapsody, man.
That is crazy. I mean, I've never. That's what's cool about this thing because you could see where these people are listening from. So whoever you are, I thank you for listening to us. But anyway, I'm going to play something from our golden age of metal. Ready? This is off of Nightfall Middle Earth. It's Time Stands Still at the Iron Heel. Remember this song,
nice.
Dude?
I love this song.
Oh my God! This I used to play this. I don't like to repeat stuff. But I used to when this album came out, I played this song all the time.
Yeah.
I literally did. So. Here we go. This is by Blind Guardian, by the way. And we're back here on the Metal Command time now, 12:33. That was Axis with Paradise and Flames. And that before that was Blind Guardian, Time Stand Still at the Iron Hill. And here with, of course, Dr. Metal from the Metal Meltdown show. And so what's your memories? Remember Nightfall Middle Earth? What a record, man.
That was an amazing record. And I don't know, it just made such a lasting impression on me. And I mean, I've played the heck out of that record over the last 13 years or whatever. And I mean, that was the first record I interviewed, you know, Hanzi for. And yeah, I had a blast talking to him. You know, and that was back when they didn't have a U.S. record deal. you know, it was another year or something like that, I think, before Century Media put that album out. I mean, it's amazing to think that, you know, for a while, U.S. fans couldn't even get a hold of their stuff.
Okay, now, question for you. I just got some emails from people. So, they asked us, who was your, if you had to pick one person, who's your favorite person to talk to? Of the last 13, 14 years, what, if you had to think of one musician that was your favorite person to talk to, that was probably, you know, whatever, your favorite person to talk to, who would it be? Like, who was the one guy to interview that you really liked the most?
Most interesting or that I liked the most?
Whatever.
Well, I mean, Hanzi from Blind Guardian has always been, he's always got so much stuff going on and, you know, always just an interesting guy to talk to and one of the nicest guys, I think, in the business. But, you know, the Savatage, you know, family, I guess you'd call it. I mean, those guys, just without exception, are just some of the nicest people you ever deal with. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the same thing with Oliva. I mean, he's always got so many different things going on that, you know, it's so easy to talk to him because you just say, oh, gee, tell me about what you've been working on. And it's like, yep. Oh, he can talk about, you know, the TSO record. He can talk about maybe Savatage possibilities. He can talk about John Oliva's pain. You know, so both of those guys, John Oliva and Hanzi Kursch, I mean, I think those are some of my favorite guests over the years.
You know who my favorite person is to ever talk to that, I mean, he was intelligent, but the guy was absolutely, just a really cool guy, was Blitz.
Yeah.
And it's funny because the guy he's 50, but he remembered who I was, and I hadn't talked to him in years. Yeah. Like, he could see you and remember exactly what your name is, which is really kind of crazy. But, you know, that was probably, for me, my favorite person. Now, the next question that I ended up getting also is, of all the people you've interviewed, which person, when you first interviewed them, was kind of like, which person wowed you the most? Like, which person did you look for? The first time you interviewed anybody, obviously, before you talk to them, you kind of try to gauge them, right, a little bit. But you think, okay, God, I'm so looking forward to this. So when you first interviewed somebody, who was the one person that was like, man, this is like made my radio career? You know what I'm saying? Like, who was it for you that when you spoke to them the first time that really just kind of did it for you?
I mean, you know, I guess a lot of people, you know. I mean, if I think about interviewing, like, Kai Hansen for the first time.
Yeah.
You know, I think that was in 98. You know, Tobias Sammet, I didn't really know what to expect at all in talking to him.
That dude's awesome, bro.
You know, when I first interviewed him for Vainglory Opera, I mean, I guess that was early 98 as well.
Yeah.
I had no idea what to expect. You know, some obscure band from Germany. I got the thing, you know, in the mail. I popped it in and immediately fell in love with that record.
Yep.
But, I mean, it was a blast talking to him. Nico McBrain.
That guy's hysterical.
You know, and that was sort of the dark days for Maiden, you know, sort of the Blaze era.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had a blast talking to him. He's just one of the nicest people ever. And just one of the most entertaining interviews I think I ever did. On the flip side, if we want to talk about people where it's like, you know, really, really looking forward to an interview and...
You're disappointed?
Yeah, disappointed. I mean, that, without a doubt, would be Bruce Dickinson.
Well, didn't you have the interview when he was drunk? Do you remember what I'm talking about?
You know, I mean, I can't verify whether or not he was really intoxicated, but I think circumstantial evidence would point to that because, you know, it's one of those things where, like, you go through this, I'm sure, with interviews, too, where, you know, you set something up,
yeah,
especially overseas stuff, you know, person doesn't call. Or, like, you hear from the record label, and it's like, oh, sorry, you know, we got to reschedule.
Well, I haven't had that happen to me, knock on wood, at all.
Really?
In the last 3 years, no. Back in the day, I did, but nowadays...
Right, well, that's what I mean. I mean, I'm not thinking so much about recent experience. I guess it's communication's gotten easier or better, but back then, I mean, there were some of those interviews where, like, you know, and you didn't really have cell phones that you can get in touch with people really easily or text messages or anything. But, you know, I think the Dickinson interview, you know, I had to go around three times or something with the label
or the
promoter or whatever at the time to get that to happen. And finally he called, you know, Cleveland time, it was probably like 8 or 9 o'clock at night, which Paris time, I think they were recording Brave New World at the time.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's probably like 3 in the morning. So, you know, I would think circumstantial evidence would point to.
that's when they had the live album come out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that was the Bruce's live album,
yeah.
I think it was.
Yeah, Bruce's
his,
live album.
You know, Chemical Wedding or whatever, the Brazil thing yep. that he did. And, you know, it was one of those things that was sort of, you know, the band growing up that, you know, one of the first real metal bands I got into, having sort of grown up on hair metal. And so I looked forward to the day when I could talk to him, had tons of questions. You know, I thought about that interview for so long ahead of time. And I got him on the phone, and I should listen to that interview because it's been a long time and see just how bad it is. In my mind, it's probably worse than it was.
Yeah.
But I just felt like it was a huge letdown.
Well, I was fortunate in that regard because I ended up getting him on an off day a few times. You know, when I used to work for Helloween, it was real easy access. I'd go, hey, man, you know, same management. Like, hey, man, who deals with Maiden? Oh, I could transfer you over here. So it was real easy for me to get those guys on an off day. But, you know, he was really, you know, that interview for me was 99 when they had the reunion. I did the 18-hour marathon, and I remember that was a bit. It was huge. I mean, this is like my musical idol here, right? You know, that guy that I completely, you know, my whole vocal style is attributed to much of him. But I was very fortunate in that regard. You know, I really didn't have many people that I thought were. You know, I don't really talk about negative stuff. I have very few. It's been very few and far between, and you know, I couldn't even tell you anybody anything really that negative. Maybe one person. But I'd have to go back, and you're talking, I have cassette tapes, like you wouldn't believe, of stuff that I couldn't even think of. But I could just tell you people that were hilarious. Like the singer from Metal Church, who ended up dying, David Wayne, that guy was hysterical. You know, he was absolutely the most hysterical guy I ever spoke to in my life. You know, Blitz was cool. You know, the Helloween guys, I really can't really say yay or nay on that because I really was really good friends with them. So it was kind of... You know, it was kind of like, oh, I know so much about him. It was different with them. But, like, with some certain bands, like, it was really kind of, wow, this is awesome. The first time I get to talk to this person. And I was pretty much blown away. There were a couple people that I was disappointed with, you know, but not to that extent. But
yeah.
I have to say the funniest interview that I've ever heard you do was definitely Marcus calling it. I got Marcus to call you. Remember that we called Marcus at his house?
Oh, yeah.
And you had Tobias Sammet calling him, prank him. It was hysterical.
Yeah.
And I remember that was back in 2000. And I remember going to Helloween CD release party. Me and Roland Grappow are sitting in his house listening to that. You had an interview in real audio on your site, I remember. And Roland's like, you don't even want to know what he just said in German on the radio. And I was like, oh, my God. And then he told me. I didn't know any German back then. I mean, I can understand some of it now, but... but that was funny. I had to be the funniest thing anybody ever did to somebody. And Marcus, he was so off guard because he remembered that when he came over. He goes, how did you guys have Toby call me up and do that? He goes, I didn't know who it was. But that was awesome. That was still one of the funniest things I've ever seen. So,
yeah, those are the early days. I mean, you know, I used to call Toby up on a cell phone or whatever at home and just chat with him. Or, you know, it was really easy to set that up and just be like, oh, hey, we got, you know, Marcus calling in, what do you think about calling in or whatever? And he just sort of improvised that or whatever.
Well, you know, the one thing that I'll never forget about Tobias Sammet was I woke up and at 5 in the morning on a Saturday and I get this dude calling me. Someone got my number. I don't even know how he had my phone number. He got it from somebody calling me to get Michael Kiske's phone number. Okay. And I interviewed a guy one time. I had his number. And I'm like, I didn't know. So I didn't know his number off top. It was 5 in the morning. He calls me up. Like, oh, Officer Metal there. He calls my mom. and I was like, well, I go to Roland. I said, okay, look. I gave him Roland Grappow's number. I was half asleep. I have all the numbers memorized. So he called Roland up, got the number. But it was funny. That ended up leading to Avantasia because I didn't even know what he was even doing that until I come like a year later, year and a half later, this Avantasia record comes out with, you know, Ernie, as you might want to call it, what he called himself, Michael Kiske singing on it. And I was like, man, he called me for Kiske's number. That's funny. That's just hilarious that was happened. But I'm never forget, you know, he's exactly a month younger than I am, Tobias Sammet, which is funny because his birthday is exactly a month after mine. So it was funny that, but it was just funny that he called me up. You know, he's like 21 years old, you know, calling me up, you know, not realizing the time difference. You know, it's like 11 o'clock over there. It's 5 a.m. And mom's like, hey, someone's on a phone for you. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Who's going to call me at 5 in the morning? It was, hey, what's going on? I'm like, huh? Well, yeah, Michael Kiske's number. So, well, anyway, we're going to get to some more music here on the Metal Command. We're going to play some Vicious Rumors off the new album. This is called Razorback Killers, and it's a title track off of their new release. Back around a Metal Command show and kind of rounding third, heading for home. And hey, man, it was great to have you on. It really was. And
yeah, it's been a blast, man. It's good to chat metal with somebody who, you know, knows what's going on.
Yeah, good stuff. Well, hey, you know what? It's been fun. Definitely like to have you down again, you know, sometime. And
oh, yeah. Well, and, you know, feelings mutual. Hopefully you make it down to Case at some point here.
Sounds good. Well, hey, you know, Dr. Metal from the Metal Meltdown show on WRUW, and always good to have a fellow metal DJ from the area on. And did you know on every Monday you could take a trip to the tropics? Every Monday night on the Sting with Island Time, host Dennis King is going to bring you 3 hours of island tunes, and he plays stuff from the big guns like the Buffett and the Beach Boys, as well as music from a growing number of independent trop rock artists. So sit back and relax with Island Time every Monday night, 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. right here on Cleveland's Modern Rock Alternative 88.3 FM, The Sting. And as we end off every show, this is Evolution. This is by Dio, and we'll see everybody next week.